A Simple Thing, written by Iridan, read by Marianas. Chapter 43. Jo'Hakan. "I have," Din said, staring down the ridge at the sprawling, blocky house that stood among snowy pine trees, tension pulling tight at his shoulders. "A bad feeling about this." The words were muffled by his helmet, which Din had pulled on before rejoining Kreese on the light cruiser this morning and worn through the tense flight down planetside. Din wasn't sure how he felt about it, wearing his helmet and all of his armor. After realizing at last what it was that Kreese really wanted, the people of Mandalore, not the planet, Din and Kreese had dragged their argument out for nearly another hour. Din's ears were still ringing with it. Worse still was the fact that, in between veiled insults about Din's tribe and their creed, Kreese had made several uncomfortably good points about Din and his situation. The best of them had been that Din should probably keep his Beskar on him, in case someone else, she had looked down the hall where Paz had disappeared, indicating the Children of the Watch, decided to try and take it from him during the summit. "I have promised not to start fights or pick up old grudges," Kreese had said. "But others..." Din had stared at his helmet for a long while this morning when he'd been armoring up for the day, and even though Din knew that his people would be angry when they saw him in it, he had put his helmet on anyway. Din's armor was his. He had earned the right to wear it. Kark Kreese for pointing that out, though, Din thought, sleepless and surly with it. He was not expecting to enjoy much of the summit today. "You worry too much, Jaren," said Axwoves easily. He was braced off of Din's right elbow, and Din had been braced off of Kreese's. Din's feelings about that, both Axe's position at Din's side and Din's position at Kreese's, were easier to parse than his feelings about his helmet. Din was wary. "I think I have a right to be, too," he thought, his temper already frayed with sleeplessness and nerves. Din and Kreese had argued each other in circles on the Gratua. Din had had an entire night to go over that argument again in his head, and he still wasn't sure who'd won. Neither of them had convinced the other entirely of their arguments. Din had wanted to be cut loose, his obligation to Kreese's quest settled, and Bo-Katan had wanted Din to swear the Rasalnare right then and there in front of her. And Din... Din wasn't sure that he could... He had listened to Bo-Katan, he'd let her argue with him, talk to him about picking another creed, without storming out or flying away like he would have a year ago, heart set against Kreese and her false creed. Din had stayed, he had listened to her. He had considered every point that she made carefully, turned them over and over in his head throughout the night. She had made good arguments. She had. "But I still don't. I don't know if I can do it," Din thought. "I don't know if I can just decide to be Mandalorian again." Everything Din had grown up believing told him that he couldn't. Kreese had tried to convince him that he could, but the choice wasn't hers to make. Din had been firm about that. So Bo-Katan hadn't gotten what she wanted, but Din hadn't gotten what he'd wanted either. He had wanted Bo-Katan to release him, to let him go. He'd wanted her to take the Karking Darksaber and everything that came with it, the claim to Mandalore that trailed after the thing like Kirik flies following spilled blood. And Kreese had refused. She'd refused to let Din out of her quest, too. When he had pointed out that he was Darmanda and therefore honorless and could leave any time he wanted, Bo-Katan had politely invited him to do so, and Din had stared at her. "If you don't want to be here," Kreese had said, with a smile that shone like a knife in the dark. "Feel free to leave, Din Djarin. You're my ally, not my prisoner." That had been disarming enough to end their argument, at least for the time being. And Kreese had sent Din off to collect Paz, who had forgotten about Din entirely and had been on the bridge wrestling with Torek Zaxxon, even though the 5 minutes he'd promised to give Din and Kreese had turned into an hour. And then Grogu, who was currently perched on Din's shoulder, a hand underneath Din's pauldron for balance, and had been less eager to meet Din's current companions than he had been to meet Paz. All of Kreese's people had come down from the Gratua in their own ships, Din included, and those ships were now arrayed across a jagged ridge that looked out over a shadowed valley in the stronghold of Clan Ren. The summit was to take place somewhere down in the valley. Paz would be there, Strill, as many other Mandalorians as Kreese had been able to find. "You don't worry enough," Din muttered back. Kreese, who was standing close enough to Din to catch his muttering, tilted her helmet in his direction. "Ketsukala, Jaren," Kreese warned. Her Mandoa was different from Boba's. When Kreese spoke Mandoa, her words didn't rise and fall like Boba's often did, phrases arranged in peaks and valleys. When Kreese spoke, her words bent, lisped, pulled and stretched like water poured over river rocks. On any other day, Din might have asked to hear more Mandoa. He had always had a head for languages, after all, and hearing the differences between Kreese's Mandoa and Boba's would have been interesting. Din might have picked up something new. But today, Din's head hurt and his chest was tight with nerves, so Kreese's words just washed over him in a tide of nonsense. He didn't understand what she was saying. "Everyone here is going to be looking for weakness," Kreese continued. "Try not to show them any." Din frowned underneath his helmet. "You should have let me leave, then," Din muttered, voice pitched even lower. If any of Din's people had come to Cronest, they'd be looking for weakness. They would be expecting to see it in Mandalorians of lesser creeds and false ways. In me, Din thought. It didn't matter what Kreese had said. Din couldn't change creeds like a man changed clothes. He couldn't tug a new one on like he'd pulled on that old smuggler's vest in Mos Eisley. Couldn't wear new words like a new name, a new face. The creed meant more than that. It had to mean more than that, doesn't it? Kreese turned back, facing the large, squat structure down the hill in front of them. She gave no sign that she'd heard Din at all. Din sighed. If Axe heard him either, he didn't show it. He was fully armored too, helmet seals engaged, bristling at the hips and wrists and boots with knives and blasters. All of Kreese's contingent were fully armored and fully armed. Din turned his head a little to get a better look at them all. Overnight, Kreese's faction had swelled to 48 Mandalorians. Din and Paz had left the light cruiser after Din and Kreese had reached that tense lull in their argument, and both of them had chosen to spend the night down on Cronest. Paz with Strill and the Foundlings, Din and Grogu on the fly. Din hadn't managed to sleep on the fly, but if he'd spent the night on the light cruiser, he would have flinched at every sound, shot at every shadow. So he'd spent the night on Cronest, and then Din had gone back up to the Gratua when dawn had broken over Cronest's high, bare mountains. And when he'd landed, the fly hadn't been the only ship in its landing base. The light cruiser had been entirely taken over by Mandalorians. Din had counted them all when they'd landed on the ridge above Clan Ren's stronghold and assembled to march down altogether. 49, counting Grogu, Din thought. He reached up and tugged one of the kid's ears gently, more to reassure himself that Grogu was still there than anything else. Grogu patted Din's cheek in reply. His claws clattered against Din's armor. Grogu was unbothered by the tension, at least for now, which was good. Din could manage his own foreboding well enough, but managing the kid's anxiety on top of his own would have been tough. Then, more uncomfortably, Din thought, and 50, counting me. If Din still counted, he brought the number of Mandalorians in Kreese's faction to an even 50. He'd spent all night circling around that question, prodding it like a bad bruise while Grogu had snored in his makeshift hammock above Din's head. And Din was no closer to an answer than he had been when he and Kreese had argued. His chest was still full of shrapnel, the fragments of all of Din's choices, and he was still no closer to figuring out how to pull that shrapnel out than he'd been when he'd left Tatooine. But even if Din didn't count, all of Kreese's Mandalorians were fully armored except for Grogu, who still had only his Beskar Mythosaur pendant. He was the only child in the group. Torrig was young, as were most of his friends, but they were all considered blooded warriors, not children, and so they all were fully armored, too. They were massed behind Din. He stood at Kreese's right, Koska at her left, the rest of Kreese's people arrayed behind them. Din could feel their eyes on him, on his Beskar spear and on his son, on the darksaber at his hip, on the tatters and tears in Din's cloak and the patched-over rents in his flight suit. Din was trying not to be nervous underneath all of that scrutiny. He didn't like having so many maybe enemies, Narudare temporary allies, who could and would turn on Din if Kreese told them to, at his back. It's not as bad as it could be, though, Din told himself bracingly. He still had allies among Kreese's people. Koska still wasn't speaking to him, but Axe had stepped into her place and had been warm enough when Din had arrived on the Gratua this morning. Torg Saxon had been cheerful, as had his elder brothers, and even Anna Cast hadn't looked at Din like she was just waiting for him to turn his back so she could stick a vibroknife in it. Kreese, she's told them that I'm with her. Din didn't doubt that Koska had told anyone who'd listen that Din had declared himself Darmanda, but Kreese hadn't accepted it. She had welcomed Din among her people on the bridge yesterday when Din had come with Paz, and she'd welcomed him again this morning. No one, not even Koska, had argued against that welcome. Do they all think, did she tell them that I've chosen a new creed? Din wondered. That was the only explanation for Kreese's faction's behavior that made sense to Din. Did she tell them that I'd been tricked by the Children of the Watch, that they lied to me so it doesn't matter if I broke my creed? Those had been points that she'd made to him last night, each one aimed as carefully as a saber dart. Din knew what Kreese was doing, too, why she was so intent on sowing doubt, on weakening Din's resolve. Kreese was leaving the decision, the choice to reveal that he'd broken his creed, that he'd become Darmanda, up to Din. She'd said as much last night. She wouldn't mention it. She'd let Din swear a different creed and accept that as... What, Din thought, still bewildered. As being Mandalorian enough for her? Kreese had smiled at him like she had, Din thought, like she'd won, because she thought she'd lured him into a trap, that she'd baited him like coaxing a lothwolf out of the forest with the promise of fresh meat, only to confront it with spears or a cage, and like it was only a matter of time before Din took the bait. And despite feeling vaguely insulted, Din could admit to himself that Kreese's strategy was a good one. Din wanted what she was offering to him. He did, he couldn't help it. He'd been a Mandalorian for his entire adult life. He'd been proud to be Mandalorian. It had been... It was my name, almost, Din thought. That was what everyone had called him. Mandalorian, Mando sometimes, or a variety of playful to insulting nicknames. Din had tolerated being called Hunter, but had broken a few noses over being called Buckethead. But he'd been called the Mandalorian for nearly 20 years. No one outside the covert had known his name until Moff Gideon had shouted it across the square in Navarro City. Kreese was offering Din the chance to take that name back. But can I trust it? Is it right? I want it, but does that mean it's right? None of those questions had an easy answer. They'd been circling in Din's head all night like Urusai circling a dying bantha, flashing Beskar teeth and Beskar claws. And Din was quite frankly tired of thinking about them. I'll have to come up with an answer soon, Din thought. The summit, which had hovered around the edges of his mind for weeks now, was today. It was in a matter of minutes. Someone, either one of Kreese's people or one of Din's, would challenge his place and then... What? Did Kreese expect Din to fight? To prove with his fists or his spear or the darksaber that he had a place among the Mandalorians? Do I want to fight? Din loved to fight, he always had. But a fight to the death wasn't a spar between warriors, wasn't even the sort of scuffle Din had gotten into with Paz in Boba's palace, and Din wasn't sure that he was interested in spilling Mandalorian blood. Not over this. Not over whether or not I should even be considered Mandalorian, Din thought. He swallowed that bitter grief down, too. Focus, he thought. Din would have his answer soon enough. He could feel them in the air, almost. He could feel them in the back of his throat. "Ah?" Grogu asked, huddled against Din's neck. Din didn't blame the kid. Kreese and all of her people were arrayed on top of a windswept ridge, their ships behind them. Clan Ren's stronghold, what Axe had called a Marut, below them. Din was warm enough in his armor, but the wind was bitter and cold. Din brought a hand up to steady the kid. "It's all right," he said softly. "We'll be out of the wind soon, okay?" "Yes, we will be," said Kreese, her helmet still fixed ahead. From this height, Din could see most of the stronghold and the trees surrounding it. There was a strip of bluish-gray beyond it, then another row of jagged ridges. Din could see the boot prints, dozens of them, in the snow, leading down from the ridge towards the house. Other Mandalorians, Din thought. "Mandoare," said Kreese, her voice rich with relish. "Move out." She started down the ridge first, her step sure and measured. Din eyed her for a split second, studied her armor, carefully painted around all of its dings and chips, the blasters at her hips, her measured stride. Then he followed, keeping a hand on Grogu's belly so the kid didn't topple off Din's shoulder. Din understood his place here. He was to stay at Kreese's side until she dismissed him or it became impossible for Din to do so. Her armor, Din thought. He had pulled the folds of his cloak over the darksaber and intended to keep it that way. The fewer Mandalorians that saw him carrying it, the better. He could be armor, but he didn't intend to let Kreese wave him around in front of the rest of the Mandalorians like a trophy kill. Axe fell in at Din's side, Koska at Bo-Katan's left, and the rest of Kreese's people fell in line too. The ridge was steep, a hard, cold scree of rock and snow that tumbled down into the forest surrounding Clan Ren's Marut. But the way down had already been cleared for them. Grogu, happy that Din was moving again instead of just standing around in the wind, pulled away from Din's neck a little to get a good look at the forest around him. He liked trees, Din had noticed. Grogu had been perfectly comfortable among the lush forests of Sorgan, and he seemed to like Yavin 4, too. Cronest's forest was much quieter than Yavin's jungle. Yavin 4 burst with life, with noise, but these trees were silent and solemn. Din turned up his auditory sensors, straining to hear the sounds of normal life. Birds, small animals, and even trees moving in the wind. And heard only boots crunching in the snow, and a lower electrical hum that was probably the stronghold security system. A strange feeling passed down the back of Din's spine, cold and gentle. He had to lock his shoulders to keep from shuddering. "This isn't going to go well," he thought. He didn't see how it could. Paz had gotten on with Kreese's people well enough, despite Paz's usual animosity for anyone and everyone outside of his tribe. But Paz had been on the Gratua to support Din. He'd had reason to tolerate the others. But now they'd all be at the gathering, and if any of the Children of the Watch had come... Din took a steadying breath and tried again to push away his persistent feeling of gloom. Their band was drawing up to the house. Din needed to gather his courage. Clan Ren's stronghold was, from this angle, a great jutting wall of dark gray duracrete. It rose from its neighboring pines like a mountain, sharp and grim. Din thought that he saw the glint and glitter of glass around one corner, but approaching from the mountain ridge showed him only that solid wall. Kreese evidently knew where she was going. She led them all down the slope, through the trees and out the other side. The Wren's stronghold loomed above them. Din took note of the security measures he saw as he passed. "Who knows," he thought, with humor nearly as grim as the looming Marut. "I might have to make a quick getaway." Din saw the usual security measures he'd expect on a base this size. Beady-eyed security cameras glared down from treetops in the corners of the main building. Closer to the ground, Din saw motion sensors and thermal detectors. He thought that he even saw anti-ship rigs up on top of the roof. Impressive, he thought. These Wrens are ready for a war. Then Din remembered the purges and how empty the rest of Cronest had seemed, and some of his grim humor faded. The Wrens are here, he thought, because they managed to survive the Empire. that the Wrens had managed to keep their home through the purges when so much of the rest of the Mandalore sector had burned was a testament to the clan's determination, their strength. Of course they're ready for war. At the base of the building there was a door, and standing in front of this door, where all the boot prints in the snow ended, was a woman. A Mandalorian woman, Din realized. She could hardly be anything else. She was kitted out in full Beskar Gam, her helmet tucked underneath one arm, and her armor was painted in shades of gray, black, and bright, bold yellow. She was a shock of color against the gray Morut, the white snow. Even at a distance, Din could see the intelligence in her eyes, which were brown and watchful. This stranger waited until Bo-Katan reached her, then folded her free hand over her chest, over her heart, and bowed to Kryze. Then she straightened, looked past Kryze entirely, and met Din's eye. She knew who he was. Din felt that knowledge flicker through him, staticky, like dragging a hand through his hair after stepping out of the sonic and feeling some of that leftover energy spark at his fingers. This woman knew him. "So this is the warrior we've heard so much about," the woman said, looking Din up and down. She was small and slight, nearly a foot shorter than Din, and built like a fine-boned Junda bird. But she carried herself with such an air of conviction and authority that Din, absurdly, wanted to bow at the waist like a Jedi apprentice to an older knight. He didn't have to guess at who she was. Her armor was painted in the same shades of yellow, gray, and black as Tristan Wren's, and though her black hair was going gray at the temples and age had gathered at the corners of her mouth, Tristan Wren had her eyes, too. "Countess Ursa," Din said. He managed to fight off the urge to bow, but he did incline his head politely, unsure if he should step out of Kryze's shadow or not. Ursa Wren was hosting the summit, after all, but she was hosting because Kryze had asked her to. Clan Wren and Clan Kryze are allies, Din thought. Close allies. But everyone calls Kryze Lady Bo-Katan. Does she outrank Ursa Wren? He missed the straightforward order of his own tribe keenly. The Allure had advised and guided them all, and beneath her all of the adult warriors had more or less equal standing. They'd all been allowed to agree or disagree with the Allure as they'd wanted, and had settled arguments with each other in the sparring ring. No one of them had been above another. In contrast, Kryze's tangled wishuck web of alliances and sworn families and clan rankings was going to give Din a headache. The Countess raised one fine eyebrow, looking Din up and down again. Her eyes lingered on Grogu, who was staring back at her unabashedly, his fingers still curled underneath Din's collar for balance. She flicked a gaze down at Din's hip, too, where the darksaber rested beneath the folds of Din's cloak. Din met her gaze impassively. He didn't know what she was looking for, or even what the darksaber might mean to her, but Din was determined not to show any uncertainty or discomfort. "Be welcome in my home," Ursa Wren finally said, after looking Din over and taking the measure of the rest of Kryze's assembled pack. No one else among them rated much of a second look. "To Kryze herself," Wren said. "I've got Ulrich directing everyone to the training yards outside. There was hardly any room to turn around in the Karyai, and Rao was looking to start fights." Kryze snorted. "Rao can start a fight outside just as well as he can inside," she said. Countess Wren, her expression serene, just waved a hand. "Blood in the snow will melt," she said. "Blood on my rugs, however." Kryze chuckled. Din listened with interest. He wasn't sure that he'd heard that name, Rao, before. Boba had named a dozen clans or more when he'd given Din his patchwork recollection of Mandalorian history, but Din didn't think that a clan Rao had been one of them. "And there are no Raos with Kryze here," Din reflected. "There were Casts, Baroyas, Saxons, Wrens, Tujarans, even an Antilles, but no clan Rao." "So this Rao, he's probably not Death Watch," Din thought. He didn't think he'd heard of a Rao among the children of the Watch either, at least not in Din's own tribe. "Kryze's enemy, then?" "We can worry about Rao later," said Kryze, confirming Din's best guess. Din wondered if that meant that Rao was a true Mandalorian, one of Jaster Muriel's remaining people, but Kryze didn't elaborate further. Instead, she started walking, gesturing at the Mandalorians behind her and rattling off the most important names among them while she did so. She introduced Din and Grogu both, and then went down her list of clan heads and notable warriors. Din, having been introduced to just about everyone on the light cruiser this morning, tuned her out and looked past Ursa Ren. Now that he was closer to the building, moving along its long gray flank, he wanted to see what a Mandalorian stronghold looked like. Their pack rounded the corner, and Din stared. From how Zhaig and Strill talked of their own covert, they'd lived in a few abandoned Separatist bases or Imperial outposts, but Din's covert had only ever lived underground, in the treetops of Kashyyyk, and in the old Lucre Hulk. Din supposed that he lived in Boba's palace now, if he lived anywhere, but even though the palace was pretty defensible, it wasn't anything like the stronghold of Clan Ren. The entire building was a great geometric construction of grey duracrete and tempered Umbaran glass. Where Boba's palace was all rounded edges and wind-worn walls, as much a thing of the desert as the mud and wattle houses in Mos Eisley's quarter and the wind-carved caves of the canyons, Ren's stronghold was all angles and plains. Another jumble of mountains rose dramatically in the far distance, and more soldier-like pines stood close to the stronghold in proud rank and file, their shadows straight and narrow. As they moved past the windows, Din could see strange glimpses of the stronghold's interior. What wasn't a wall of rippling glass was given over, surprisingly, to art. Din saw a long mural painted directly on the duracrete of one wall opposite the windows, a riot of shapes and colors, and found himself wanting to take a closer look. What, Din wondered, thinking back to the nondescript walls of many of the coverts of his childhood, painted only with secret symbols or maybe a few decorations for the kids, at most a few strips of fabric to give each room a little privacy. Does Mandalorian art look like? Geometric, Din thought. He imagined that Mandalorian art looked a lot like Rillish art, rich with symbols and hidden meanings. He craned his neck back to watch the mural as it went past. Ren, however, didn't seem interested in letting Din go explore. Kreese had finished listing off all of her allies, and she and Ren were in deep discussion, the rest of Kreese's people following along the edge of the stronghold through the snow, away from the mountains and the trees.
Appa?
Grogu asked quietly. They were near the end of the stronghold now. Their boots crunched over the ice. Behind Din, the three Saxon brothers had started to whisper to each other, their voices rising with excitement.
I'm fine, kid, Din said just as quietly. Everyone's fine.
Grogu, who probably didn't need the Force to feel the anticipation rising in the air, grumbled his disagreement. He didn't start to cry or tug at Din's pauldron to try to get Din to turn around, though, so Din kept moving. Finally, Ren and Kreese reached the end of the stronghold's long wall, and Kreese stopped. She turned to face her people. Din stopped, too. Koska and Axe, the Saxon brothers, Myra Antilles in her white and gold armor, they all stopped and looked at Kreese. She still had a commanding air about her. The sense of conviction, of authority, that Ursa Ren carried with her was sharper in Bo-Katan, more dangerous. More magnetic, too, Din could feel it pulling at him. "You all know why we're here," Kreese said, once she was sure she'd gotten everyone's attention. Even Torig had stopped whispering to his brothers. "I don't know how many Mandalorians answered my call. I don't know who they are or where they came from. But," she added, even though no one had spoken, "I know who we are, I know what we need, and I know what was taken from us." Bo-Katan looked around at all of them, meeting their eyes, even though everyone but Grogu and Ursa Ren were wearing helmets. "What was taken from all of us," Kreese repeated, her voice softer. Then, louder, "That means, no matter who else has come to this gathering, that we need to set an example. I want no fighting," she continued. Some of the warriors behind Din began to mutter. "I mean it," Kreese said, slashing a hand through the air. Her voice hardened again. "I don't care if your clan's most bitter enemy is here. This summit is Sin Vatin." Din blinked. He didn't recognize the words, but he thought he understood the intent. Koska had already told Din that the summit was neutral,
that Mandalorians of any faction would be allowed to gather there and none of them would be hurt. I'm just surprised, he thought, that there's a word for that in Mandoa.
What if we are the ones attacked?
A Mandalorian, Anna Cast, Din realized when he turned around to see who had spoken, demanded.
It's all well and good to say this is Sin Vatin, but how can we trust that others, some who have never known honor, will keep it?
Kreese sighed. The sound undercut her fierce dignity a little.
If you are attacked or challenged, of course you should defend yourself. We are Mandalorian. Refusing to fight,
and here she looked at Din, whose shoulders stiffened in response,
shows weakness.
Anna Cast settled back down, mollified.
Kreese looked over all of them again. Her visor gleamed in the sun. She tilted her helmet in Ursa Ren's direction, and Ren nodded.
All right, said Kreese. She turned on her heel. Let's go.
Din, who had been halfway expecting Kreese to make a grand speech, blinked after Kreese in surprise.
Gideon had liked to make speeches. Din remembered that from Navarro. Gideon had liked to lord his victory over everyone else.
Kreese wasn't Gideon. Din knew that. Gideon might have carried the Darksaber once, might have defeated Bo-Katan and the Mandalorian Resistance, might have crushed them all and turned Mandalore to glass. But he hadn't been Mandalorian. Nothing about him was like Bo-Katan Kreese. But Din had still expected Kreese to be smug, maybe, proud. She had done the impossible, after all. She'd pulled a bunch of Mandalorians together, settled several feuds, and brought a band of at least 50 together into one coalition. No one among her band, not even Anna Cast or Din himself, argued with her. From how Boba talked about Mandalore, Din thought, even managing to pull this many people together is an achievement. But Kreese hadn't spoken like she was sure of her victory. That bad, unsettled feeling tugged at Din's ribs again. The back of his neck prickled. It's too late, he told himself. I'm here already. It's not like I can turn and run. The Kyrick Fly was back on the high ridge with all of the other ships that had come down from the Gratua. There would be no escape. And besides, I'm not a coward. I'm not weak, Din thought. Kreese had looked at him when she told her people not to show weakness. Din was Darmanda, but he wasn't weak. He set his jaw. Knowing Kreese, she'd probably looked at him like she had to goad him into playing along. Baiting Din again, tossing him another scrap to keep him following her into the jaws of some trap. Din scowled to himself. He hated that it was working. But Kreese was right. Mandalorians despised weakness, and if Din showed any, he'd just be inviting trouble. I've got Grogu, Din reminded himself. I can't afford to show any weakness or give anyone a reason to fight with me. The kid could get hurt. So, hating it, Din followed after Kreese. She turned the corner, aiming for Clan Ren's training fields. Din took a steadying breath and followed her. Then, as soon as he had cleared the building and saw what lay beyond the Marut, Din stopped. His breath caught. Clan Ren's training grounds were stretched out across a vast frozen lake. Blue-gray ice glittered in the sun. The ice had been cleared of any fresh snow, and the lake sprawled across a shallow valley to another ridge of peaks in the south. That shallow valley was full of Mandalorians. They were spread out over the ice in clusters and packs in every direction, grouped together by clannish instinct, and there were more of them out there on the ice than Din had ever seen in one place. He tried to count them all and then almost immediately abandoned the effort. There were too many to count, and that left Din's heart beating too fast against his ribs, joy and grief braided together in his chest. His unease vanished. He couldn't stop staring. Axe Wove said something to Din, but Din didn't hear him. The valley was full of noise, too, and all Din could hear was his own heartbeat roaring in his ears. He stepped past Axe, closer to the lakeshore, drawn towards that sea of Beskar like iron to a lodestone, and shook off the hand Wove's tried to set at Din's elbow.
There are so many of us, Din thought. His grief was dimming, outshone by simple, bright relief. The frozen lake was packed with Mandalorians wearing armor of every color, from plain silver, like Din, to glittering gold, from blue and gray to white and red, royal purple to muted green, jet black, fiery orange. Some were in just one color, and some had painted every piece of their Beskar Gom a different shade. The signets Din saw on pauldrons and chest plates were just as varied as choices of paint. Din saw plenty of swooping shriekhawks and snarling iron wolves, of course. There were some moth owls, like Kreeza's signet, and some snow bears, like Ursa Wren's. A tall, thin Mandalorian in matte gray armor had a white Falthier stamped on one shoulder, and another in fiery orange armor had a black charhound racing across his chest. There were plenty of animal signets, both of animals native to the Mandalorian sector and not, and there were plenty of symbols used as signets, too. Din saw hammers and tongs, anvils, blasters, swords, wheat, ships. Some signets were painted onto pauldrons, and others, like Din's own, had been forged in. Din's snarling mudhorn was the only mudhorn that he saw, which gave Din a strange little flicker of pride, though he did see a few mythosaur signets and wondered what Boba would think. Din pushed that thought away. Boba would hate it here. He turned his attention back to the colorful mass of Mandalorians, trying to sort through everything that he saw. Everything, everyone, was so different. The shapes of the armor, the gear each Mandalorian carried, even the way each helmet had been designed. There were helmets with focuses and rangefinders, helmets with comms arrays, and helmets like Din's own that had no attachments at all. There were visors in every shape, too, from Din's more standard visor to the rounded owl eyes Kreeze preferred to simple, narrow bands of black glass. And, Din thought, his eyes stinging behind his helmet, it's not just the colors or styles of the armor that are different. It's everything. It's the people. Men and women, humans and non-humans. Most Mandalorians arrayed across the lake had their helmets on, but not all of them did. And even among the helmeted Mandalorians, Din could see the Leku of Twi'leks, the horns of Deveronians, the three-fingered hands of Aduros, the long fur of Wookiees. There were stooped elders, too, and proud young warriors. And there were children. It was the children that made Din's eyes sting. Grogu wasn't the only toddler riding around on his father's shoulders, and there were babies tucked into a parent's arm, teenagers darting in between clustered pockets of Mandalorians, clans, and younger kids clutching at their parents' kutas, the edges of cloaks, older siblings' hands. Din counted 30 or 40 children, a dizzying number, before he lost track. He took another step away from Kreeze's people, his mouth moving soundlessly. His heart soared. There's too many to count, Din thought, dizzy. There's more kids here than there were in Mos Pelgo, more than Skywalker's got at his academy. There were Mandalorians in various stages of Beskar Gom, too. Many, like Din, had a full set of armor. Din saw a lot of heavy plate, like Paz's armor, and a lot of lighter hunter plate, like his own. But there were plenty of Mandalorians across the crowded valley. The crowded valley brimming with 500, 600, 700 Mandalorians, maybe more, who didn't have a full set. Most had helmets, at least, and a pauldron or two. But at least a third of the Mandalorians that Din could easily see didn't have a chestplate or a cuirass, didn't have gauntlets. Almost half didn't have thigh plates or greaves, and no one that Din could see had any Beskar weaponry. No traditional Beskar Kadeh, no spears.
There's so many of us, Din marveled. Of them. They must have come from all over the galaxy.
So far, it didn't look like any blood had been spilled across the ice over any of those differences. It didn't look like any fights had broken out yet at all, actually. The frozen lake was packed with Mandalorians, and it was packed with noise. But it was the low rumble of 50 conversations going all at once, not the clash and clang of armor hitting armor.
Din just stood there on the lakeshore for a moment, trying to take it all in. 500 Mandalorians, Din thought, looking at them all. Or more. He'd never thought that he'd see so many Mandalorians all in one place.
Din knew that there were several hundred Mandalorians across the network of the coverts, but no more than 5 coverts ever gathered together at one time.
Din hadn't ever gone to one of those covert gatherings. He had expected to when he'd retired as the tribe's Baroya, assuming he'd survive to retire anyway, and settled down into his place as an elder of the tribe, teaching foundlings and spending his days mending or cooking and telling stories around the forge. But before this moment, the largest gathering Din had ever attended had been gatherings of his own tribe. Gatherings of 30 or 40 when he'd been young, and then gatherings of fewer and fewer every year.
But this... Not all of these Mandalorians are children of the Watch, Din thought. They can't be.
Most of the Mandalorians here couldn't be. There were dozens who had their helmets tucked under their arms or propped up on their knees, and those barefaced Mandalorians were clustered with others who had their helmets on, their kin. In fact, only a few clusters here and there all had their helmets on, and these bands were pulled even closer to each other than the rest. Other bands were still suspicious, judging from the looks that were flashing from group to group, from the tension Din could almost taste in the air, but most groups were looser, less defensive. They looked normal, like ordinary people, if any Mandalorian could be considered ordinary.
They look like Boba, Din thought, skimming his eyes over the crowd.
His heart was still beating too fast, knocking hard against his chest, thrilled and grieved together. There were so many more Mandalorians here than Din had thought there would be. That was something to celebrate, a reason to rejoice. These people, they had survived. All of them, the Mandoare, had survived. But now Din was not one of them. He had not survived, not as a Mandalorian. Din shoved that grief away, biting the inside of his cheek. It had no place here. Not among all of these people who had managed to make it. Din could grieve later on his own. He could tuck himself up into his bunk on the fly after he dropped Grogu back off with the Jedi and let himself mourn. But right now...
Right now, Din thought, scanning the crowd again, trying to focus despite the noise and the movement and the dizzying array of armor colors. I need to find Paz.
Buah?
Grogu asked, still clinging to Din's shoulder. His ears were waving up and down in excitement, his eyes huge as he tried to take in the crowd. He wanted to get down and explore.
Not yet, kid, Din said apologetically.
He managed to lock his grief away, at least for now. There's too many people here to wander off.
Boo,
Grogu complained, but he stayed up on Din's shoulder. That was good. If Din set Grogu down here with all of these other kids running around, it'd be hours before he'd be able to track Grogu down again.
I could use your help, though, Din told the kid.
The best way to keep Grogu out of trouble was to give him something to do, Din had found.
Ah?
Grogu's ears pricked up again. Din smiled. His eyes were still prickling, but he could say now that it was mostly just earnest joy.
Yeah, he said. I need to find Paz in all of this. Your Bavodu and your cousins. Think you can help?
Grogu warbled an affirmative and started scanning the crowd intently, using his perch on Din's shoulder for a good vantage. Din did the same, searching for Paz's familiar armor in the sea of strangers. The crush of other Mandalorians was almost bewildering. Din tried searching for blue-gray armor, but quickly counted 15 or 20 Mandalorians wearing that color in just a handful of seconds. He tried searching by height next, as Paz had always been enormous, but there were plenty of other tall Mandalorians out on the lake, both human and not. Din focused his attention on the little pockets of helmeted Mandalorians, the ones who were pressed close together to form a wall of living armor, standing apart from everyone else, but...
Ah!
Grogu exclaimed, letting go of Din's pauldron to point excitedly towards the other end of the valley. Din had to crane his neck around to see what Grogu was pointing at, but the kid was right. Paz, Strelid aside, and the kids arrayed around him had claimed one of the far corners of the lake for himself and his battered little tribe. And Paz, Din realized, wasn't alone.
The Alor, Din thought.
Her back was turned and she was still far away, on the opposite side of the lake from Din and Grogu. But Din still knew her, of course he knew her. The golden helmet, her crown of spikes, the fur wrapped around her shoulders. She was unmistakable.
She survived, Din thought. Din had hoped that she would survive. She'd stayed behind on Navarro to finish honoring the dead to distract the Empire, and even though Din had left her to face Gideon's men, he'd hoped that she would survive. Had thought that, of everyone, of all of them, that she would survive. She'd taught Din how to fight, she had forged his armor for him. Thinking of her dead at the hands of the Empire, it hadn't made any sense.
She made it, he thought. She made it.
Din had expected her to make it out, so seeing her here, it wasn't a shock exactly. The Alor had been the most likely of any of them to survive the Empire's hunt. But even though it wasn't a surprise seeing her standing out in the open, her back turned, a strange feeling came awake in the pit of Din's stomach. It was relief, but it was fear, too, apprehension, anger. Din stared at the armorer's back.
No, he thought to himself, taking a deep breath.
He made himself think of the overgrown temple gardens on Yavin 4, the smell of them, wet and green, and the sounds of belly birds and wind-rustled leaves. Din tried to reach for peace, for calm. He fought the tangled feelings in his gut back down. He didn't have time to be angry with his Alor, not here.
I'm not angry, he told himself. I'm not, it's just...
Jaren, Kreese called sharply. Din stopped. He had started walking towards Paz without realizing it, and now had one boot on the lakeshore, the other on the ice. He turned around to look back at Kreese and found her and all of her people staring at him.
See someone you know? Kreese asked.
Her tone was a little lighter, but Din could hear the trap in it anyway. She wasn't ready to let Din go, not yet.
Just curious, Din said, avoiding the question.
She'd met Paz already, and Din was sure that the Alor would make herself known sooner or later. Din didn't need to rush a confrontation.
I'm here, he reminded himself, to honor my debt to Kreese. Once that's finished, once she presents her argument to the rest, I'm finished here too. Besides, it's not like the Alor's going to be happy to see me.
Paz was probably telling her right now what had happened. Some of these other Mandalorians who followed other ways would be fine with Din's presence here, but once the Alor knew the truth, Din knew that she wouldn't be.
Ah? Grogu asked again, quietly.
He had sensed the change in Din's mood because he sank down closer to Din's neck and was eyeing Kreese warily. Kreese just looked back at them both. The rounded lenses of her helmet glinted in the morning light. Behind her, her Talvore shifted restlessly.
There's a lot of people here, Din offered, trying to defuse the tension.
Kreese eyed Din for a moment, then nodded.
There are, she said. More than I had hoped for, even.
Come, you can find your clan later. For now, there are some Mandoare I would like you to meet.
Din's shoulders pulled tight at that, but he didn't argue or try to resist. There was no point with Kreese, not really.
She did ask me not to start any fights, he thought wryly. Din could punch back if someone else started an argument, but for now... For now, Din would do as Kreese asked.
Tuka,
Grogu complained. He was looking everywhere, his attention caught by every bright color and every flash of motion. Din chuckled.
I know, kid, he said. You can make new friends later, all right? I bet your cousins will show you around.
While Din and Paz had been on the light cruiser, Grogu had been introduced to Kieran, Took, and Myrta. According to Strill, the four almost cousins had gotten along well enough. Grogu had spent enough time at Skywalker's Academy by now to get along with other children, and Paz's kids, despite a year on the run, had learned that Grogu was a foundling just like they were and folded him into their definition of clan. Din was sure that the kids would look after Grogu if they wanted to explore the gathering a little and meet other Mandalorian children.
Honestly, Din thought, as he fell in beside Kreese again and let her lead the way onto the frozen lake. That's probably the best thing that could happen here. Our kids meeting kids from other ways and figuring out that there's more than one way to be a Mandalorian. Before they get old and stuck in one like I did. The thought caught Din by surprise.
He almost stopped walking, shocked by it. Only the others at his back kept him moving.
Do I think that that's something that the kids, our kids, should learn?
When he'd been a child, all Din had wanted to be was a Mandalorian. He had followed and agreed with and sworn to the Creed wholeheartedly. But he'd done it because the Creed had been what had made Din Mandalorian. It had been the only way forward for him.
But for Grogu...
Grogu, Din thought, will choose his own way. Din knew that, like he knew the weight of his armor, like he knew the hilt of the darksaber in his hand.
But the other children of the tribe, like Paz's kids...
Paz's kids had already sworn the creed, but there were other foundlings in the covert. If they weren't taught that there were other ways, they would take the creed because it was what they knew. And the creed...
The creed, Din thought wearily, has no mercy.
That hadn't bothered Din when he'd sworn it. It hadn't even bothered him when he'd grown up. It hadn't bothered him as a warrior and a hunter. It hadn't even bothered him when he'd broken the creed. It had grieved him, but Din had accepted it. It bothered him now.
Paz's kids, Grogu, none of them should grow up feeling like they don't have a choice, Din thought. Like it's Mandoade or death.
Kreese's words were rattling loudly around in Din's head. Boba's words, too. Words about how men made mistakes, how being Darmanda meant turning one's back on themselves, their people, instead of a handful of unfeeling words. He knew that the Creed had been wrong. It had been wrong to demand what it had demanded without any give or any mercy had been wrong. Boba had shown Din that. Din's own words and thoughts were jostling for space inside of his head, too. 50 arguments, with himself, with Paz, with Boba and Kreese and Cobb, were clamoring thunderous for Din's attention, knocking against each other. The old ways, his old beliefs, the broken bits of Din's old conviction were knocking and sparking and tangling with all of the new, with all of the things Din had said and thought and felt and realized. The pressure of them was enormous.
I can't not hear, Din thought, half firm and half desperate.
He couldn't afford to bend under that pressure, the weight of what Din was thinking. The heresy, heavy as Beskar, here, with all of these eyes watching him. Bo-Katan's arrival had not gone unnoticed by the gathering. Awareness of her was spreading, rippling outward across the frozen lake. Din heard her name being murmured among the nearest group of Mandalorians, a serious-looking knot of warriors, most of them adults, who all had the same toothed mythosaur signet etched into their pauldrons. Kreese and her warriors were being watched closely. Too closely. Din had to keep himself together. He straightened under the attention. A few months ago, Din might have faded into the crowd. He might have tried to pull one of his disappearing tricks, tried to blend into the shadows under the pine trees, into the crush of other bodies. But now...
I am not a coward.
Kreese wanted Din here. She wanted the others, Mandalorians of her way and Mandalorians of his, to see him.
So they can see me, Din thought. They can look.
He'd show them nothing. No weakness, no doubt. Determination settled him some. He lifted his chin, meeting the stares of the nearest strangers. Kreese heard the whispers, too. Her satisfaction was bright in the air.
Kutsukala, Jaren, Axwoves murmured.
He was still braced at Din's right like a faithful Akdog. His voice was pitched low so none of the others nearby could hear.
I don't know what that means. Din muttered back, just as quietly.
Axe snorted, the sound dry.
It means steady, he said. Hold your nerve, it's going to be all right.
My nerve will hold, Din hissed. He swept his gaze over the crowd. More and more groups were reacting to Bo-Katan's arrival. Some were pulling away, pulling in, gathering closer to their own people. Others were craning their heads, standing tall, trying to get a better look. Some Mandalorians were smiling, some were very decidedly not.
What about everyone else's?
Axe's second snort was even drier than the first.
Everyone else's nerves aren't my problem. Meaning that mine is, Din thought. Axe Woves was here to watch Din then, to make sure that Din didn't shame Bo-Katan. Din wanted to growl, he wanted to punch Axe in the throat. None of that would help Din, though. He was alone here. Paz was on the other side of the ice, and with the Allure here, and no doubt informed of what Din had done, Din couldn't count on Paz's help anyway. My nerve will hold, Din repeated. His voice was steady. This isn't my first fight, Wolves. Garatin, said Axe, in much the same tones as Boba, affectionate. You're stubborn. It'll be over soon, probably. And then Kreese's band was among other Mandalorians, crossing the frozen lake, and there were too many strange ears nearby for them to talk at all. Din kept his chin up and his step steady. He kept the darksaber hidden under the folds of his cloak. Kreese's name wasn't the only one Din heard rippling through the crowd.
Is that Cusca Reeves? I thought she died on Findar.
Green and white? Those can't be the Saxon boys, not with Lady Kreese. Lady Kreese? What's she lady of? She lost a Sindari, you know.
Forget Kreese, we know she'd be here. That's Enna Cast back there, after what she did.
Din turned his auditory sensors down. He didn't want to hear it when the crowd started talking about him. Instead, Din focused his attention on Kreese. He wanted to know what she thought of all these gathered Mandalorians, who she avoided, who she didn't. The sheer number and variety of others here was baffling to Din. He could get lost in all of the details and differences. But Kreese would know everyone. By faction, if not by name, Din thought. Kreese hadn't known Din's name, but she'd known that he was a child of the Watch as soon as he'd pulled away from her on Trask. Despite the dread still twisting uneasily in his gut, Din couldn't help but want to know more, to want to know these people. He wanted to know who they were and where they'd come from and how they'd survived this long with all of the might of the Empire bent towards wiping them out. He wanted to know what the symbols on their armor meant, if they spoke Mandoa, what they believed, what made them Mandalorian. I'm here already, Din thought, gathering his courage. I might as well try to learn about these people. My people, while I can. Din was pretty sure he knew how this summit would end. Kreese would make her pitch, convincingly, and she'd rally the Mandalorians who would join her quest to her name. She'd thank Din for his service, then declare him Darmanda, then take the Darksaber and let Din go off alone. Or she'll have me swear a different creed, Din thought, and add me to House Kreese like the Saxons and the Wrens. She'll push me until either I agree or I don't, and if I don't... He shook the thought away. No matter what happened, Din wanted to know more about the Mandalorians around him. He wanted to know why three Mandalorians of identical height all wore identical white and red armor. He wanted to know why another Mandalorian, who was standing by himself and watching the crowds around him with a stillness Din associated more with meditating Jedi than any Mandalorian he'd ever known, had a starboard signet on one pauldron, and no one else did. Din wanted to know what each color of armor meant, where it had been forged, how all of it had been hidden or stolen or won back from the Empire. So he took a deep breath, tilted his head at Bo-Katan, and said, "Who is everyone?" Bo-Katan was quiet for a moment. Then she said, sounding sincere, "Do you really want to know?" Din nodded. "I do," he said. He couldn't see her face, but he thought that Kreese smiled at him. Some of the hard, fierce edge she carried with her softened. "Come with me, then," she said. "We still have some time before the summit's scheduled to start. Come and meet your people, Din." Wary but willing, Din obeyed. Cusca and Woves followed him as Kreese peeled away from the rest of her faction, who followed Ursa Wren deeper into the crowd. But Din didn't think that he was outnumbered. Kreese hadn't been hostile. "I don't know everyone," Kreese said, gesturing Din up to walk at her side instead of just off her shoulder. Din obeyed again. Cusca and Woves, well practiced at playing the silent shadows, faded into the background a little. "I grew up on Kalevala, a planet in the Mandalore sector. That was the seat of my house, much like Kronest is the seat of Clan Wrens.
Din nodded. He supposed that that made sense. I lived on Concordia, too, Bo-Katan continued, and then on Mandalore for many years. I know most of the great clans, the houses, and many of the smaller clans, though I'm most familiar with Deathwatch's clans and those who joined the Mandalorian resistance against Gar Saxon and the Empire. Din had gotten most of this history from Boba, but found that he didn't mind getting it again from Bo-Katan. She had a different perspective on everything, which was to be expected, he supposed, if Boba had gotten the true Mandalorian's version of history from his father and his father's friends, and Bo-Katan had had Death Watches. And it was interesting to hear her recount great battles and clan feuds, allies and enemies. She introduced Din to dozens of Mandalorians. One of the clans that had been clustered near the edges of the crowd along the lakeshore was Clan Awad. They were much reduced, Kreese told him, and had fought on both sides of the civil wars. Another, the clan with the toothed mythosaur signet stamped proudly on every shoulder, was Clan Kaldau, one of the oldest clans that still existed. Din met more representatives of Clan Eldar, which was an ally of Kreese's, and of Clan Far, which had fought for Tor Vizsla's Death Watch, but laid down their arms after his death and the ascension of Satine Kreese. All of them greeted Din warmly enough, despite their wariness, their curiosity. Din was curious about all of them, too, so he didn't mind their staring so much. He tried to commit every name he could to memory and let Kreese sweep him along. Kreese introduced Din to Kaderas and Vivuts, Ordos, Kelborn, Zeteras. She introduced him to members of clans that Din had heard of, like Clan Deshra, and to more who were from clans he'd never heard of before. If any of the Mandalorians Kreese introduced Din to thought it was odd, their Alord introducing a clanless Mandalorian like Din, who'd never thought to find so many kinsmen in the galaxy before, none of them said so. Most, in fact, greeted Din with enthusiasm. They asked after his name and were eager to meet his son. They remarked on his armor and on his Beskar spear. Some had even heard of Din. They knew him for Baroya, a hunter. One Mandalorian, a cheerful Ordo, who introduced herself as Ciri, even told Din that she avoided systems she knew he hunted in because she knew that he'd take most of the high-value bounties for himself. Sorry? Din said, halfway apologetic, but Ciri Ordo just laughed. Don't apologize for being good at your job, she advised, grinning. She was a Mirlin, her face tattooed, and she was still very young. Most of the Mandalorians Kreese introduced Din to were perfectly comfortable showing their faces, though Din kept his own helmet on. You made me work harder, that's all. By the time Kreese had finally turned back and made for the middle of the crowd, Din's ears were ringing with all of the names he'd learned. The greetings. Sukhugar spoken 50 times in 12 accents with genuine welcome, and the well wishes. No one had acted like Din didn't belong here. Granted, none of them really knew him, not even ones like Ciri, who'd only known Din by reputation. But none of them had demanded that Din prove himself to be a Mandalorian, like his own covert might have demanded an outsider test their Beskar. No one demanded to know what creed Din followed. He was sure that Kreese had very intentionally introduced him only to her allies or to clans she hoped would be allies. This was still politics, after all. Kreese wasn't likely to introduce Din to her enemies. Despite that, Din did catch a glimpse of Paz and the Alor again. They were still talking together as Din followed Kreese back towards the center of the crowd and their little circle had grown. 6 Mandalorians in mostly black armor had joined them, and one had her arm thrown over Strill's neck. Strill's covert came, Din thought, smiling. That's good. The rest of Kreese's faction, including Countess Wren, had made themselves at home in the middle of the frozen lake. Wren had called the lake her clan's training fields. In the center, there was a raised platform, also made of ice, that stood 3 or 4 feet above the rest of the lake. Whoever stood on top of it would be able to see most, if not all, of the crowd. It was Wren on top of the platform now, surveying all of them with cool eyes. Her signet was a snarling snow bear, a fierce animal often found on frozen planets like this one. Din wondered what Ursa had done to win it. When Kreese, Din, Koska, and Axe approached, the rest of Kreese's pack stood aside to let them through, and Countess Wren looked down at Bo-Katan.
"Well," Wren said, "are you ready, my lady?"
"I am," said Bo-Katan. Her voice was calm and collected, her shoulders were straight. She looked around at her people, who had closed ranks around her.
Din didn't like the closeness. He still felt like someone was only minutes away from sticking a knife in his ribs.
All of you, Kree said lowly, are brave warriors, Manda Carla. No matter what happens today, I am honored to stand beside you.
She turned around in a slow circle, locking eyes with each and every Mandalorian one by one. She even locked eyes with Din, who couldn't help but dip his head. She was a strong leader. It wouldn't be hard to follow her.
Satisfied, Kreese looked back up at Ren.
When you're ready, she said. Where's Ulrich?
Watching for latecomers, said Ren.
She tapped her comlink.
He'll call if he needs anything.
The Countess Ren stood up, looked out across the frozen lake, and cried out in a ringing voice,
Suikigar, Mandoade.
It took several seconds for her voice to echo back, conversations dying off one by one as each clan and group turned towards Countess Ren. Countess Ren wouldn't be hard to follow either. She waited until all other conversations had dropped away before raising her voice again.
Many of you know me, she said, her voice still ringing out over the ice. But many of you do not. I am Ursa Ren of Clan Ren, sworn to House Kreese. This is my home here on Cronest. Olarom, all of you are welcome here. All of you, she continued when muttering broke out in the crowd.
Din didn't know who started it, but he wouldn't have been surprised to find out that his people had begun to mutter. Ursa Ren was showing them all her face. To the Creed, she was not Mandalorian, and neither was any who stood with her.
On my honor, this gathering is Sin Vetin, Ursa Ren declared. There are no grudges here. There are no feuds. No one will be slaughtered, and none of you will be turned away, though there are many who fought on different sides of the war.
Sin Vetin? What does that mean? Din wondered. Ren and Kreese both had used the phrase today. Neutral ground? That was how Koska had described this gathering. She'd said that no one would be hurt.
That's not what Ren is promising, Din thought wryly.
Grogu stirred restlessly on Din's shoulder again, and Din reached up to soothe the kid, listening intently. Ren said nothing about making sure that no one was hurt. She only said that no one would be allowed to act on old grudges or old blood feuds. There will be bloodshed, Din thought. Any gathering of Mandalorians, especially a gathering like this, was going to see some bloodshed. The Alor won't accept Kreese and her people, Din thought. She had always been staunch in her convictions, even when Din had been a child. The Alor had taught Din all of those convictions. She believed that there was one way of the Mandalore, and that it was hers, and that anyone else... Anyone else, Din thought grimly, is an enemy to be defeated. Din wished that he'd had the time to slip away from Kreese and her people to go and talk to his own. He wanted to explain. He wanted the Alor to forgive him. Din wanted her to tell him that it was all right, that he'd misunderstood the Kree, that he could come back and take up his place among them, hunter and brother, and that everything could go back to the way it had been. It was a childish want. Din knew better. There was no going back. But he wanted it anyway.
Stop, he told himself sternly. It's too late. There's nothing else that you or anyone else can do. The creed is broken, and it's time. It's time to move on.
The thought was bright and painful, like wrenching a dislocated shoulder back into its socket or cauterizing a wound.
Like pulling shrapnel out, Din thought. Like resetting a bad break.
Painful, but necessary. He took a deep breath to steady himself. Ursa Ren was still speaking. She was still listing her assurances, her promises of peace and safety. Din wasn't sure if anyone in the crowd was buying those assurances, but Ren gave them prettily enough, then looked down at Bo-Katan.
More of you know Bo-Katan Kreese, Lady of House Kreese, Ursa Ren continued. Many of you fought beside her. Many of you fought against her. But it is at her request that we are all here. Lady Bo-Katan has called this summit and promised Sin Vetin on her own honor as well. Will you hear her speak? There was more muttering in the crowd, restlessness, armor clinked and boots shifted. But no one, not even Paz or the Allure, spoke up to stop Bo-Katan from climbing atop the platform with Ren, who inclined her own head and stepped down with a nod. "Many of you do know me," Kreese began. She swept her gaze over the crowd. Her visor glittered. "Everyone who fought at my side in the First War and the last. Olorom, Vorentia. When we were exiled from our home, the memory of your courage kept me from despair. And everyone who fought against me, or did not fight at all," Kreese continued. Din froze. Kreese and Ren both had sworn to forget old grudges, at least for the duration of the summit. But Din had been Mandalorian for 30 years. Did any Mandalorian ever truly forget a grudge? Kreese swept her fierce gaze over the gathered clans and tribes again. "Olorom," she repeated. "Vorentia." Shock rippled through the crowd. "I mean what I say," Kreese continued. Her voice was strong and carrying. "All of you, you survived. Whether you stood against the Empire or not, you survived. Whichever path you followed, you survived. You kept your families together as best you could. You protected your own. Megin Ajala," she said.
"That is honorable."
Din stared up at her, more surprised than he'd be if Kreese had punched him instead. Hiding from the Empire was honorable? Kreese had stood against the Empire. Everyone here knew that, even Din knew that. Kreese had rallied a resistance against the Empire in the last days of Mandalore, and she'd fought to drive them from the system. She'd lost, of course. Gideon had won, Mandalore had burned. And these people, they were what was left. Not all of what was left, Din hoped. He had only seen the Allure with Paz and hoped that that was because the Allure had left some warriors and foundlings behind, not because she was the last of their tribe. Even though Din had never thought to see so many Mandalorians in one place, he hoped that there were more still out there. Mandalorians holding down the covert, protecting their homes, waiting to see what happened here on Cronast. Din had expected Kreese to sneer at the Mandalorians who hadn't fought, who'd hidden like Din's people, who had run away. But she wasn't. She was greeting them just as she'd greeted her allies. She was commending their bravery. Din was so thrown that he didn't even think to resist when Kreese gestured at him, Koska, and Woves and beckoned them up to stand with her. Axe nudged Din's shoulder, and Din, numb with shock, obeyed. He climbed up onto the platform and felt all of Mandalore fix their attention on him. He was sure that they were looking at Koska and Axe too, but Koska and Axe were both in Bo-Katan's colors. They were obviously her people. Din wore no colors at all, and his signet was a mudhorn, not a moth owl. Din tugged at the folds of his cloak a little, making sure they were covering the darksaber. "All of us, Death Watch, the true Mandalorians, the Protectors, the neutral Mandalorians," Kreese said, her voice gathering volume, conviction. "Clan Kreese and Clan Ordo, Ren and Saxon, the Mandalorians of the coverts and the tribes, the valleys of Cronest, the cities of Kalevala. We survived."
Someone in the crowd shouted, "Aya."
Din couldn't see who it was, but others took up the cry, shouting that word, "Aya, hunt, alive," until the valley rang with it. Din stared out over the crowd, shocked again into silence. He'd never heard anything like this, had never felt anything like this. The strength of the sound echoed in Din's chest. It vibrated against his armor. Grogu felt it too. He stood as tall as he could on Din's shoulder and looked out over the sea of bodies, clutching his mythosaur pendant tightly. Kreese let the noise rise and ring, then raised her hand for quiet. It took several seconds for the crowd to settle back down, but they did. Din was impressed. Again, he felt Kreese's conviction pull at him. She was a leader. Everyone in the valley felt it.
"I honor your courage," Kreese said when she had every eye and ear on her again.
The attention slid off Din, which he appreciated. He wanted to listen. He didn't want to worry about everyone watching his reactions.
"I understand your sacrifice," Kree said. "All of us, we lost our homes, our friends, our kin, even our planet."
"Yes," she added when there were cries of grief from the crowd. "Mandalore is gone. Concordia, Concord Dawn, Findar, Kalevala, gone. Lost to the greed of the Empire."
"But,"
she added, raising both hands now. Her palms were held upwards, facing the sky.
"We are not gone. We're not lost. All of you, you did the impossible. You survived."
"As touching as it is to have our sacrifices honored," said a wiry Mandalorian woman in full Beskar Gam, her armor painted a pale shade of red.
"Why have you gathered us, Bo-Katan Kryze? If there is no Mandalore, as you say, then there are no Mandalorians. What do you want?"
"Our people were never the planet," Kryze countered, calm. "As well you know, Seema."
"But it was Mandalore you offered us when you rallied my clan to your cause the first time."
Seema, Din didn't know if that was her clan name or her own name, and Kryze didn't elaborate, pointed out.
"Wasn't that what you promised us? A free Mandalore? A home for us all?"
"Not all of us,"
another voice called. Din looked and saw the black-armored Mandalorian who stood behind Strill, either Strill's mother or the allure of her covert, had stepped forward. Her own tribe outnumbered Din's, but Din was still glad to see them.
"You didn't promise Mandalore to all of us,"
the Mandalorian shouted.
"I didn't keep you from it, either,"
Bo-Katan said. Her voice had sharpened. She let her hands fall loose to her side.
"It was your pride, Kirad, that kept you away. I had nothing to do with it."
The Mandalorian snorted.
"So what would you offer us?"
she demanded.
"You called us out of hiding. What would you offer us, Lady Kryze?"
Kryze studied the Mandalorian for a moment, and then she took off her helmet. She did it smoothly, with the ease of long practice, and when she looked at the children of the Watch with her own eyes, all of them, even Strill, even Paz, recoiled. Din's heart sank.
"The child of the Watch speaks the truth," Bo-Katan declared. Her fierce blue eyes flashed in the sun like shards of ice. 10 years ago, I offered you your planet back. I offered you freedom from the grip of the Empire. I can't offer you your planet today. But," she continued before anyone else could speak, "I can offer you something else. You who have lost your home, your children, your parents, your brothers and your sisters, your armor, your people."
She looked at Din when she said that. It was a quick glance, just a bare flicker of Kryze's eyes, but she looked at him.
"Your honor," she said, "your dignity. I can't offer you Mandalore, but I can offer you vengeance."
"What vengeance?" called a tall man who stood with a little nod of 4 or 5 other Mandalorians. Din studied the man for a moment. The speaker was human, and he had a full set of Beskar Gam, though he had tucked his helmet securely under one arm. He looked to be somewhere around Bo-Katan's age, or maybe even a decade older, with reddish hair that had started to weaken to blonde at his temples and flashing blue eyes. His armor was blue, too, but it wasn't the bold color of Kryze's armor or the blue-gray of Paz's. This Mandalorian's armor was somewhere between the two shades, and his gauntlets, the sharp cheekbones of his helmet, were painted with a shade of blue so fine and pale it was almost white. His pauldrons were bare, but a red shape was painted on the forehead of his helmet. Din was too far away to make out what it was, but at this distance it almost looked like a Clan Vizsla Shriekhawk. Out of the corner of his eye, Din saw Kryze's lip curl.
"You lost everything, just like the rest of us, Rao," she said.
"Oh," Din thought. This man was Rao, then. The Mandalorian Ursa Ren had mentioned, who she thought was trying to start fights. So he's not Death Watch, Din thought, or an ally of Bo-Katan's. But if he's not Death Watch, why is his signet a Shriekhawk? This Rao was older than Boba. Din wasn't sure that Rao was old enough to be a veteran of Jaster Mareel and Tor Vizsla's civil war, but he was definitely old enough to have faced off against Pre Vizsla. And based on the way Kryze is looking at him, Din thought, keeping quiet for now, she knows that.
"I did," Rao agreed.
His eyes flashed again, sharp as a shriekhawk's claws. He raised his voice to be heard across the valley.
I lost my kin to Gar Saxon, who is dead.
Yeah, definitely not Deathwatch. Being an enemy of the Vizslas or the Saxons didn't mean that Rao had been an ally of Jaster Mareel's, though. For all Din knew, Rao could belong to a different faction entirely, beyond the Deathwatch and the True Mandalorians and all of the variants in the middle. If Din had learned anything about other Mandalorians in the last few months, it was that there were more of them, and more differences among them, than he had ever thought possible.
Gar Saxon's sons are dead, too,
Rao continued.
As is most of his clan. I've had my vengeance.
On the ground around the raised ice platform, Torrig, Pike, and Wells shifted.
Gar Saxon served the Empire,
Kreese pointed out. Her voice was just as loud as Rao's, pitched to Carrie.
Everyone he killed on the Empire's orders or with the Empire's permission. I've had my vengeance on the Empire, too,
said Rao, and his mild tone didn't match the hard Beskar look in his eyes.
Not all of us hid in the Outer Rim when the Empire came for our homes and our clans.
To Din's surprise, it was Koska, not Kreese herself, who made an angry hissing sound, back stiffening like a furious Nexu, and started forward. Before she could get past Kreese, Kreese stopped her with an upraised hand.
No, Kreese allowed, still looking at Rao. Some of us were too busy selling ourselves to the Rebellion, isn't that right, Rao? You fly for the New Republic, even now.
More angry muttering broke out across the lake, punctuated by a few jeers. Rao himself was unmoved. Lady Bo-Katan, Ursa Wren cut in neatly. Her expression was pinched. Let's not start in on who did and didn't fight against the Empire in those days. This gathering is Sin Fatine, yes? Bearing old wounds or dredging up old grudges is hardly going to help.
What the Empire did to us isn't just a grudge, Kree said. And I flew at your side, too, when you rallied us all to take Mandalore,
Rao added. He talked like a soldier, his voice rose above the crowd easily, ringing and clear. He's one to watch, Din realized. This Rao, Kreese was afraid of him. No, he corrected, watching her. Kreese's expression was cool and remote. Only her eyes flashed with anger. Not afraid, but wary. Rao has influence. Even though Rao only stood with five other Mandalorians, he was commanding the attention of dozens, hundreds of others. Kreese had come with a larger faction, but Rao was someone that others were willing to listen to. And if he's not with Kreese, Din thought, that could be a problem for her.
I fought the Empire,
Rao said.
I was in the skies over Mandalore during Sa'necha. I heard the call go out urging us to save ourselves. That said that Mandalore was lost, and any who stayed to fight would be lost along with it.
Din shivered. Grogu stopped craning so eagerly over the heads of the crowd and hunkered back down against Din's neck, sensing the grief in the air. The Black Knight, Din thought. Boba had told him about that, too. The night the Empire had decided that it was done entertaining Mandalore's rebellion and had sent a fleet, Gideon's fleet, to turn the planet to ash. Din couldn't imagine what it had been like. His world had ended once, the Separatists bearing down above him, but they hadn't destroyed his planet. Just his village. Just his family. But the Empire had burned all of Mandalore. They hadn't left anything on the planet that the survivors could rally around.
No one is questioning your courage, Fen Rao,
said Kreese, stiffly.
How could we? You led the Protectors, right? The best of the best. Warriors pulled from all the great clans set on Concord Dawn to guard us.
Din winced. Ouch, he thought. Judging by how few allies Fen Rao seemed to have around him, he and the Protectors, whoever they'd been, hadn't managed to protect much of anything. Rao heard the rebuke, too, because his eyes flashed. But he didn't rise to the bait.
As I said, he growled, my vengeance has been satisfied. It was Gar Saxon who killed my men, not the Empire. Who are you to tell me that my vengeance is unfinished? Are you the Mandalore?
Din snapped his head back around to Kreez, waiting to see how she'd respond to that charge. But Kreez dodged the question entirely. Gar Saxon may have taken Concord Dawn, but he was just the blaster, Kreez spat. The Empire pulled the trigger on your people, Rao, and you know it. The Empire was defeated. Driven out, Kreez returned. She looked out over the crowd. Not defeated. You all know that it's true. We are people of the Outer Rim. The New Republic drove the Empire from the core, from its rich Inner Rim worlds. But out here, the Empire is still strong, still dangerous. That statement won Kreez a few more whoops of agreement. Din couldn't argue with her, not over that. She was right, the Empire still lived in the Outer Rim. The Empire had taken Grogu, Gideon still had had enough funding to experiment on a child to build the Dark Troopers. That wasn't defeat, that was exile, a setback. But all of these people, to throw them against the remnants in an effort to make some kind of point. Rao opened his mouth again, truly angry now. But both his next words and Din's thoughts were cut short by Ursa Wren, who stepped back up on the platform and murmured something in Bo-Katan's ear. Din fixed his attention back on Kreez. Whatever Wren was telling her wasn't good news. Kreez's eyes had narrowed and her expression had grown sharper. "Send him away," Kreez said, her voice low. Din doubted that the words could travel beyond the raised platform and the tight ring Bo-Katan's people had made around it. But Din heard it, and he narrowed his eyes. "I can try," Ursa murmured back. "But Ulrich, he's an artist before he's a warrior, and Tristan is here." "Send him away," Bo-Katan repeated. Her voice was spiked with urgency. Whoever had arrived back at the stronghold, Bo-Katan wanted him gone. Anger stirred in Din's chest. "No," he thought. "You don't get to. If there's someone here who wants to be here, who is Mandalorian, you don't get to send them away." Kreez didn't get to decide who was and wasn't Mandalorian. "Send who away?" Din asked, loudly. Kreez shot him a look that was full of venom. Din's instincts had been right. "Boba Fett," Kreez said. Din froze. But Kreez's voice had carried beyond her platform. "Boba Fett?" a warrior in gray and gold shouted. "The bounty hunter?" Boba's name rippled out through the crowd. Kreez bared her teeth. "Send him away, Countess," she said. She locked eyes with Din. "Boba Fett has no place here." The anger that had been stirring in Din's gut broke open. It tore through his veins, cold as ice. "You don't," he thought, "get to decide who does and doesn't have a place here." Kreez had no right to look at Boba and declare him an Arrowetti, declare him Darmanda. That was Boba's choice. And I don't know if anybody ever offered that choice to him. Kreez wouldn't have offered it to him. Boba had told Din that he'd gone to Mandalore once as a much younger man, and Din now knew why he'd gone. Boba had wanted to be Mandalorian, or at least to be like his father. He had wanted to learn more about Jango Fett and where Jango had come from. So he'd gone to Mandalore. And then he'd left again, because after the Clone Wars had ended, Gar Saxon and other Death Watch clans had been in power, and to them, being Mandalorian was a matter of blood. Oh, they took in foundlings. Din was proof that Death Watch took in foundlings and made them just as Mandalorian as any child born to a great clan. But I was no one, Din thought. My tribe, we were in hiding, in exile. The clans back on Mandalore didn't care about us because we weren't a threat to them. But to Gar Saxon, who ruled through betrayal, to Bo-Katan, Din realized, though the realization was guilty now, diminished by his respect for Kreez, which he couldn't manage to shake even in the face of his swelling anger, who ruled through strength, but also through her sister's claim to the throne. Satine Kreez had been the Duchess of Mandalore, not the Mandalore. And Boba, if Boba was recognized as Jango's son and Jango as Jaster's, Then Boba had a claim to Mandalore, too. Din wanted to laugh. Boba wanted nothing to do with Mandalore. He wouldn't have taken the throne. Boba wanted his corner of Tatooine. An entire planet. But Kreese is afraid of him, Din realized. Of what he represents. So if he's not allowed here, if they keep him from being called a Mandalorian... Icy fury, raw outrage made Din speak again. Let him in, Din said. Kreese stared at him. Let him in, Din repeated loudly. He was met with silence and more stares. Most of the crowd had forgotten about Din entirely. Rao and Kreese had been arguing so passionately that everyone else had dropped out of view. But now almost every eye in the valley was fixed on Din. He felt their attention sharpen on him. Din lifted his chin. They can stare, he thought. Din was used to being stared at. He didn't want the attention, but he wasn't going to shy away from it now. Not when Din could use it. Kreese wants to use me as her armor, Din thought. That's fine, she can. But every Mandalorian knows that armor can be a weapon, too. Beskar was hard. A blow from a Beskar gauntlet could be fatal if there was enough force behind it. Kreese met Din's eyes. Fury lurked there. Let him in, Din said again. He pitched his own voice to Carrie. Kreese and Rao weren't the only ones who could shout. He has a right to be here. This gathering, Kreese said, is for Mandalorians. Perhaps unsurprisingly, it was Fen Rao who jumped in again to counter Kreese. Boba Fett, he said. The son of Jango Fett, you would claim that he is not a Mandalorian? Son, Koska countered, leaping to Bo-Katan's defense. Are a man's clones, his imitations, his sons now, Rao? Are they not? Rumbled one of the three Mandalorians in white, red, and gold armor. If a Mandalorian claims any child is their child, is that child not Mandalorian? The houses take in fewer and fewer foundlings these days, but there are many clans who know the value of all children, not just those born of Mandalorian blood. Who's to say that Jango Fett had Mandalorian blood? An Ordo. Vel, Din thought her name was, though he'd met several Ordos in the last several minutes, demanded. Adopted by Muriel or not, Fett turned his back on Mandalore long before he was ever cloned. He died Darmanda. Even you Skiratas have your code, Koska added, sneering at the warrior who'd brought up bringing in foundlings. Din startled. Boba had mentioned a Skirata or two, but Din hadn't really thought about a clan Skirata outside the little clan Wenyan, Agda, and Annika had made. A clan Skirata outside of the creed. But Jango Fett has no honor, and Boba Fett has none either. That, said Din coldly, is not true. Koska rounded on Din, shoulders slung low like a tusk leopard about to pounce, and Din knew what she was going to say before she said it. She was going to say that Din had no honor either, that he couldn't have any honor because he was Darmanda too, as Jango Fett had been. Din was ready for her to say it. Everything inside his head, all of his tangled feelings, his confusion, the guilt and grief and the anger, had finally taken shape like Beskar hammered in the forge. But Koska didn't get the chance to say anything. Kreese grabbed her elbow, keeping her back, and before Kreese could say anything either, Fen Rao cut in. "You would speak for Boba Fett, then?" Rao asked. The words weren't spoken loudly, but such a complete and total hush had fallen over the valley that Rao might as well have shouted them. Din met his eyes. "I would," he said. "And who are you?" There was less malice in Fen Rao's voice than Din had expected. Din was standing with Kreese after all. He'd come down into the valley at her side. To everyone else, Din probably looked like Kreese's ally. Her trusted ally, he still stood near her and had crossed the lake at her right hand. Din took a deep breath. Grogu clutched at the edge of Din's cape. "My name," Din said, skin prickling with the force of the Mandalorian's attention, "is Din." "And your clan?" Rao asked. The answer that Rao was looking for, Din thought, was probably Clan Kryze. He wanted to know if Din was Kryze's Talvod or if Din was standing on his own. Din took another deep breath. Kryze won't. She won't murder me in front of 500 Mandalorians, he thought. Not unless she calls for an honor duel first. Clan Jaren, he said. Rao smiled. It was a quick thing, fleeting, and it wasn't the same sort of knife smile Kryze had flashed at Din when she'd thought that she was getting her way. Din thought that Rao's smile was genuine. Very well, Din of Clan Jaren, he said. He looked back at Kryze. Clan Rao stands with Clan Jaren in this. I will vouch for Boba Fett. So does Clan Vizsla, Paz boomed, his voice carrying from the other side of the crowd. That drew a lot of attention. Murmurs broke out among the gathered warriors, much like it had when Paz had announced himself on the light cruiser. Clan Vizsla, it seemed, was a name that still held some weight. Din stared across the ice at Paz, surprised. Paz hated Boba, he'd made no secret of that. He and Boba had tried to kill each other. Why is he vouching for Boba? Din wondered, suspicious. He was too far away to gauge Paz's feelings clearly, but Paz had folded both arms across his big chest and lifted his chin. The Allure at his side said nothing. Rao took the yoke of the conversation neatly again, steering them back to the matter at hand. That's three clans who will stand for allowing Boba Fett among this gathering, he said. What say you, Bo-Katan Kryze? Does that make Boba Fett Mandalorian enough for your company? Kryze glared vibro-knifes at Din and Rao both, but she was caught. Rao, with Din's help, though Din hadn't necessarily meant to give it, had maneuvered Bo-Katan into a neat trap. Either Kryze accepted Boba, which she didn't want, or she undermined her own promise from the opening of the summit, that the gathering was Sin Vatine, neutral ground, and no one would be turned away because of what they'd done or who they had supported in the past. Kryze knew it too, because she gritted her teeth and said, By all means. Have him brought down, Countess Wren. If Din Djarin is willing to vouch for Boba Fett, I have no objections. There was some kind of trap in the way she'd said that, but Din was too busy looking past the crowd towards the Murut to care. Boba had come. Boba was here. Din hadn't expected to see Boba again until he'd gone back to Tatooine. He hadn't expected Boba to want anything to do with the gathering. But he was here.
Ba?
Grogu asked, picking up on Din's, well, on whatever it was that Din was feeling. Mingled relief and excitement and dread, little joy, apprehension. Boba was here, but had he come for Din, or had he come because there'd been trouble on Tatooine? Din didn't have to wait long to find out. Wren murmured something into her comlink, and only seconds later, back by the stronghold, a familiar black and green figure came striding through the snow, details resolving as Boba came closer. Boba carried himself like a king. If he was surprised to round a corner and find himself in front of several hundred expectant Mandalorians, he didn't show it. He barely even broke stride. Din knew Boba well, knew him like Din knew Paz, like he knew Annika and the Allure. And so Din caught the split second of hesitation as Boba rounded the Murut and started down the slope to the lakeshore, but Din doubted that anyone else did. He looks good, Din thought. Even though Boba might be coming to Din with bad news, Din's heart couldn't help but lift at the sight of him. Boba did look good. His armor wasn't pristine or even all that freshly painted, but its scuffs and scrapes, the shining marks in the paint where Beskar gleamed, the carbon burns, spoke to Boba's skill in battle. His black Tusken robe set him apart from all of the Mandoade and Kutas. His Gaderfi was fearsome at his back. He looked like a warrior.
Ba!
Grogu repeated, standing as tall as he could on Din's shoulder. Yeah, Din agreed, coming to a decision. He didn't need to wait for Boba to come all the way to Din. Din could meet Boba where he was. That's right, kid. Without bothering to ask Kryze for permission, Din left her side and hopped off the platform. He didn't run. He didn't need to. The crowd was murmuring around Din, but they were keen enough to get out of his way. The various clans and tribes and factions parted. They all stood aside. This wasn't how Din had wanted to see Boba again after their argument in the palace. Din hadn't really thought about how he'd wanted to find Boba again, but he'd imagined that they'd reunite in Boba's rooms after court had ended, where they could be alone, where they could talk, where Din could apologize. This, an open valley watched by several hundred eyes, was less than ideal. Din didn't care. The distance between them narrowed, and then there was no distance at all. Boba had crossed the lake in long, urgent strides, and Din had made it to the outer edges of the crowd. There were 10 meters between them, then 6, then none, Boba pulling up and Din slowing down, and then it occurred to Din that he didn't know what to do with his hands. Din wanted to reach out and grab Boba, pull him close, but didn't want to embarrass him here. There were too many eyes, and Din and Boba had never embraced outside the privacy of Boba's rooms. Pressing their foreheads together was too presumptuous. Din wasn't sure that Boba still wanted Din that way after their argument. At a loss and aware of the eyes on his back, Din settled for a warrior's greeting, reaching out to grasp Boba by the forearm. They were both staring at each other. Boba looked away first, looking down at Din's offered hand. He snorted. Oh, Din thought, wincing. He had overstepped, then. Boba didn't want. And then Boba reached out, taking charge, and hooked a hand behind Din's neck. He scattered all of Din's thoughts in one go and pulled Din's head down, bringing his own up to press their foreheads together. Din's helmet dug into the bridge of his nose, and the pressure was so sweet he had to close his eyes. Din pushed back. He reached out and caught Boba's free hand, their wrists bumping together, Beskar singing. Boba tangled their fingers together. Din, Boba said, his voice hoarse. Din. Hey, Din said back, just as hoarse. His heart hammered loudly against his ribs, caught in his throat. You made it. Boba snorted softly. They were making a scene. Din knew that they were. He could hear the murmurs behind them rippling out through the crowd. He imagined that he could hear Paz's snarl of outrage. But in this moment, Din couldn't bring himself to care. Boba was here. He was here. Din, Boba said, low and urgent. He didn't pull away, even though he was probably just as aware of all the attention on them as Din was. I didn't mean to get in the middle of this, Boba said, but I had to tell you. Niseta, Din, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I didn't mean. I'm sorry, Din said. I pushed, you told me to stop, and I didn't. It wasn't your fault, said Boba, finally pulling away. He was fully armored, expression hidden behind his helmet, but Din could almost see his face anyway, the grief in his eyes. It was mine. I didn't. I shouldn't have. Oh, Boba said, breaking off. Jerrica, what's your kid doing? Grogu, never happy to share Din's attention at the best of times, had decided that he had tolerated Boba and Din ignoring him for long enough. He stood all the way up on Din's shoulder, balanced precariously, and was looking Boba full in the face. He took his steadying hand off of Din's pauldron. Grogu, Din said warningly, but it was too late. The kid had made up his mind. Ba, Grogu announced, and leapt from Din's shoulder with a Jedi's grace directly towards Boba's chest. Boba's reflexes were pretty good. He caught Grogu before the kid made contact, making a faint sound of surprise. He had to let go of Din to do it and caught Grogu with both hands. Grogu giggled and waved his own tiny hands at Boba's face insistently. Din, Boba said again. He held Grogu out a little ways from his chest like the kid was a grenade instead of a small child. Well, Din thought, having seen the damage Grogu could do in a temper tantrum. He's a Jedi kid, they are grenades, kind of. Din sighed. Boba Fett, Grogu. Grogu, Boba. Grogu, be nice, Din added sternly. Grogu giggled again and reached for Boba's helmet. Boba eyed the kid, tense and wary, but didn't pull away.
That was good. Grogu liked the chase almost as much as he liked the attention.
What's he want? Bubba asked.
Din smiled. To say hello, he said. You're elite. He said the word quickly, getting it out before he could talk himself out of it. Din and Boba hadn't resolved their argument by any means. The strength and warmth of Boba's greeting made Din feel lighter on that score. They would resolve their argument, he thought. But they hadn't stopped to sort out their place in each other's lives, their agreement.
Lee,
Grogu agreed. Boba held very still when the kid brought his hands up to tap his claws against the cheeks of his helmet. Din wasn't sure how much of all of this Grogu actually understood. Grogu had taken to Paz yesterday pretty well, had liked Strill and the other foundlings, had seemed to understand when Din had explained it to him that Paz and Strill and the kids were Grogu's family. And now he was accepting Boba in the same way, with a child's easy affection. But Din didn't know if that was because Grogu thought that all Mandalorians were his family, or if Grogu could sense Din's regard for Boba. If he could sense that Din loved Boba still, even though he and Boba had fought. Boba stared down at Grogu like the kid had flipped him over, like Grogu had hit him with the force right between the eyes. Grogu lifted his chin impatiently, demanding a Mirsh Moresha of his own. Cautiously, Boba gave it to him, leaning down to press his forehead very gently against Grogu's. Grogu laughed outright this time, high and bright, and patted Boba's cheeks. Then he wriggled in Boba's grip a little, pulling back to get a better look at his new Bavodu, and said, with as much determination as he could muster,
"Eh!"
Din was used to translating for Grogu. At Boba's quizzical look, he said, "He wants to sit on your shoulder. He likes it up there."
"Won't he fall off?" said Boba, though he was obliging enough and transferred the kid to one shoulder, holding still as Grogu clamored all over him.
"Hasn't yet," Din assured him, smiling. His heart was still beating hard against his ribs. They looked right, Boba and Grogu. Boba was obviously uncomfortable, but Din had seen him with Paz's foundlings, with Daeri's son. Boba was all right with kids when he thought that no one was looking at him. That made Din realize all at once that he, Boba, and Grogu were very much not alone. All of Mandalore, or all of what was left of Mandalore anyway, was staring at the three of them, their fascination rapt and attentive. Din flushed underneath his helmet. He'd put the crowd entirely out of his mind. Din turned to face them all, his cloak stirring in the wind, and shifted a little so that Grogu and Boba could take shelter behind him if they wanted to. If Boba didn't want all of Mandalore staring at him. Boba was fearless, though, or at the very least he was resolved. He stepped out of Din's shadow and came to stand at his side. He lifted his chin. The toddler on his shoulder probably undercut some of Boba's fierceness a little, but rising over Grogu's head was the wicked hook of Boba's Gedarfi, so Din wasn't too worried about Boba's ability to look intimidating. For a heady moment, Din wasn't worried about anything. He couldn't be, not with Boba by his side. Boba was elite, clan. The strength of that conviction was like Beskar, invincible. Apparently, Din and Boba both looked fierce enough that most others, the Awads and the Kaldaos still gathered by the lakeshore, the Fars, Clan Caldera, and even Ciri Ordo, dropped their eyes. Rao kept looking, though, calm and steady. Paz, head and shoulders over his nearest neighbors, was looking back, too. So was the Alor, her golden helmet gleaming, and so was Bo-Katan Kryze. At this distance, Din couldn't make out her expression very well. He couldn't see exactly what she was thinking. That put his hackles up. The tension that had been simmering just underneath Din's feet, beneath the ice, was suddenly much closer to the surface. And then, the whispers, which Din had tuned out to focus on Boba, grew louder, more distinct. "Look," the Mandalorians nearest Din were whispering, in a tide that was growing louder and louder, passing from clan to clan. "Kryze doesn't have the Darksaber. He does." Din froze. He didn't have to look down at his side to know what the others were seeing.
In Din's rush to greet Boba, in the wind, his cloak had come free of its careful folds. It fluttered against his heels even now. The darksaber swayed a little in the wind, too, its hilt knocked against Din's hip. "The darksaber," Din heard, the words repeated, expanding. "But that means..." "Fen Rao," Bo-Katan Kryze declared, her voice carrying. Her hair was very red against the wide and gray mountains behind her. Tension cracked through the air like rotten ice giving way. "No," Din thought, his heart sinking. "She wouldn't. This isn't what she wants."
"You asked me if I was the Mandalore to try to decide the fate of all of our people," she continued.
Dread pooled in Din's belly. His vision narrowed. Beside him, he heard Boba made a faint, rumbling sound, rough and angry.
"As you can see," Kryze said, sardonic, "I'm not the Mandalore."
She met Din's eyes again, and he saw the knife shining in her face, the Beskar edge, the skill behind the blade. Din braced himself. He couldn't do anything else. Kryze smiled, with all the mercy of a moth owl stretching its talons out to catch its hapless prey, and said, "He is."